In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Last week, as you may recall, I mentioned that I think we're on the verge of seeing the end of COVID mandates. The narrative is quickly falling apart and losing support. That people are done with the mandates, in part because they're realizing now, too late, that the government never had your best interests at heart. They had their own best interests at heart. The mandates never worked, none of them, and they did far more damage than good. And then, over the weekend, Barry Weiss, a podcaster, joined leftist Bill Maher on his show and said, "She's done. I'm done with COVID," she said. "I went so hard. I sprayed the Pringles cans I got at grocery stores, stripped off my clothes because I thought COVID would be on my clothes. I did it all. A lot of us did." And then we were told, "You get the vaccine and you get back to normal." And we haven't gotten back to normal. It's ridiculous at this point. And here's the thing. Bill's audience, Bill's leftist audience, applauded. There was also an article in the Washington Examiner that Denmark welcomes the life we knew before and scraps COVID-19 restrictions. Prime Minister Frederiksen announced that as of February 1st, Denmark will be open and the Nordic country will say goodbye to the restrictions, she said, and welcome the life we knew before. No, it is not the life we knew before. Now we live under the constant threat that the freedoms we thought we had can be instantly removed at the whim of some elected officials so long as they call it a health emergency. The government you thought protected your rights does no such thing. That your countrymen will willfully and blindly go along with the removal of their own freedoms and attack you if you don't also give up your freedoms. That you can be jailed, that you cannot speak up, that you can lose your job, lose your loved ones, all because others panic and you don't. And that none of the government officials or bureaucrats who did this have yet to even so much as lose their job or are likely to be punished for violating your rights. Because if there's one thing that COVID taught us is that government will, can, and does protect itself, not you. No, this is not the life we knew before. But there is one additional benefit of COVID is that it exposed the rot, the absolute garbage of the left. As more parents were forced to stay home, they looked over their kids' shoulders and listened in to what exactly was being taught to their children. We've been saying this for years, but sometimes people just have to experience it for themselves. Because when we say it, there's an element of, oh, that can't possibly be true. They wouldn't teach my kids that they're racist just because they're white. That would be racist. And yet, there it was. As I also said last week, I hope that we are entering the phase of the genuine pushback. And maybe as more of this is exposed, we will see some of those elected officials lose their jobs. And when they're replaced, then let the real investigations begin. On today's show, we're exposing more of the radical left, including what the nation's largest teacher union tried to hide. And then in the second half of the show, pushing back against woke corporations, including what you can do, and a new congressional scandal, one that is so bad that it might actually have you agreeing with AOC. Right now, though, I'd like to welcome Kimberly Herman back to the show. She is the General Counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, an organization that fights for your liberties. Kim, it is great to talk to you again.
It's great to be back with you guys.
Yeah, so last time we talked with you was about a year ago. You guys had a big win for property rights on the eviction moratorium. The Biden administration, and in particular the CDC, had decided arbitrarily that it had the power to claim renters could not be evicted. But you guys got that reversed to allow landlords to go ahead with evictions for those who simply stopped paying because they could stop paying. How has that played out?
It was a huge win, and we were really excited about it. As you mentioned, the CDC had come in and said, you know, hey, landlords, even if your renters aren't paying, you can't evict them. And state courts, you can't go move forward with, you know, those lawsuits. Otherwise, we're going to fine everyone. So the district court judge in Texas said that's unconstitutional. So the CDC has absolutely no constitutional authority to come in and stop evictions. And that ruling has stood. The case ended up, or some ancillary kind of sister cases, ended up going all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. And the U.S. Supreme Court ultimately ended the moratorium and said that the CDC couldn't do it because laws said they couldn't, so actual statutes that Congress had passed. But our ruling stands that they just don't have the constitutional authority, and that means that Congress can never come back in and do it either. So it's a really wide-reaching ruling, and we're really excited that it's on the books, and we're just going to continue to build off of it.
Well, and that was such an exciting win. It really was, especially this recognition that, yes, in fact, the law matters. Because this was the CDC inserting itself into contracts between landlords and renters. I mean, they had absolutely no business doing that. Looking back at that, do you think this was sort of a test by them to see just what they could get away with?
Oh, absolutely. Right. I mean, it was in the beginning of COVID, and they're trying to use COVID as a reason to grab as much power as they can. And our eyes are, as a country, are much more open now, mm-hmm. right, with whether it's the masks or the vax mandates, all the things that they said, oh, we're not going to do that. They've just gone ahead and done. This administration particularly does not believe that it is bound by the Constitution or by our federal laws. It just does whatever it wants and basically then says, sue us. And you want to know what? We're suing them and we're winning again and again and again. And it's pretty sweet. I got to tell you, it feels really good.
I bet that does. And it feels good to us watching that for sure. We had mentioned on last week's show that I firmly believe that we are at the end of these mandates and that they are starting to crumble. We're seeing this over in the UK where they have repealed everything. They're putting it back on the individual responsibility. They're still saying, if you're sick, stay home for heaven's sakes. But really, it's about focusing on the individuals taking individual responsibility. I just saw the Prime Minister of Denmark announce that her country was going to do away with the mandates. Do you see this happening here in the U.S., that these mandates are going to be crumbling left, right, and center, or do you think they're going to continue for quite a while?
I mean, they're crumbling because of the court rulings that we are getting and winning. Do I see the Biden administration backing down from them? Do I see our blue state governors backing down? I don't, because they just can't get out of their way. All they want is power. And whoever it is that's telling them to get it this way, they're very mistaken and it's very misguided. But it's also a way for them to gather information, right? We saw the Heritage Foundation, their publication, The Daily Signal, exposed where the government is tracking all this detailed information on vaccinations, on mask wearing, all of this kind of stuff, compliance with laws in a database. Hmm. Right? They are tracking everything we do. And so they also see it as a way to do that. So they're not going to give up this power grab easily. Unfortunately, I wish I had better news. But the good news is we've got the courts and we're stopping them there. So they're going to have to stop eventually.
Yeah. And how ironic that in the land of the free, we may be the last ones to give up these dictatorial mandates. All right, everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Kimberly Herman. They had a great article talking about the National Education Association hiding some online records that Kimberly's organization found. You'll hear why they wanted to hide them from the public. We'll talk about that next. Kimberly Herman is general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation, a nonprofit organization. From their website, SLF believes that the U.S. Constitution is a complete document creating limits on government. When the government goes beyond their limits, those limits, we hold the government accountable, enforce the Constitution, and rebuild the American Republic under the original design laid out by our founding fathers. Their website is slfliberty.org. You can even contact them if you think that you have a potential case that they may want to take on. So, Kimberly, there was a really interesting article on justthenews.com discussing Southeastern Legal Foundation uncovering some deleted pages from the National Education Association's website. In a really interesting tweet thread, Southeastern Legal Foundation said, quote, NEA hid votes on white fragility, Black Lives Matter reparations amid new scrutiny. So if these are such terrific education topics, why would the NEA try to hide them from the public?
Great question, right? They're trying to run from the narrative that they support this while at the same time teaching it in their teaching training and voting for it, right? So like you said, just to kind of take a step back, we were preparing for an upcoming continuing legal education, right? So all lawyers have to take these CLE classes and get credit. And we were preparing to do one of those, and we uncovered all of these pages that the NEA had scrubbed from their website. And some had been talked about before, but when we really dug in, they actually had votes where they voted to support Black Lives Matter in the classroom, where they voted to support reparations, white privilege, like you said, abortion. It was absolutely just, it just kept going on and on, more progressive and more progressive and liberal and left-leaning. And they're hiding it from the public because they don't want to be exposed. They want to be able to keep saying, we're not teaching critical race theory. We're not teaching Black Lives Matter. We're not teaching kids to become social protesters, when that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah. I found it very interesting that they were hiding these in September of 2021, right in the middle of the very heated Virginia election, where CRT and some of these other leftist race-based curriculum became part of the election debate. Have they explained why they're trying to hide their support for these?
No, I mean, they operate as a cartel, right? That's what we're calling them. We're calling the all of these teacher unions and school board associations. They are nothing more than K through 12 cartels. And they have not explained it. I don't anticipate that they will. Their narrative changes every hour of the day. One day they're teaching critical race theory. One day they're not teaching critical race theory. One day the conservatives made it up, right? They try to make it like we're making all this up. Well, look at our lawsuits, right? We've sued school districts. We sued a school district in Evanston, Illinois. We sued one in Springfield, Missouri. And in there have details and pictures of these documents and the curriculum. This is in our schools. They are teaching our kids to hate one another because of the color of their skin. And they're trying to divide our country further. And for anyone that questions whether or not it's in there, look at our complaints on our website. All of it is there.
Yeah. You know, if the NEA had dedicated a week to gun training and gun safety and lesson plans discussing the virtue of the Second Amendment, which is in the Constitution, unlike BLM and critical race theory or even abortion, I mean, because it's a constitutional topic, I suppose you could make an argument that kind of curriculum should be taught. But how would the left have reacted to such curriculum?
Right. They would have had us been burning all of us on a stake. I can't even imagine the words that would be coming out of Biden's mouth then. Right. We think we've heard him use enough swear words already. But it would be crazy. And the bigger thing to me in all of this is that you have the NEA. And when I say they're a cartel, it really is true.
Yes.
Because they're out there telling the FBI, along with the NSBA, they're telling the FBI and the Attorney General in the White House to investigate parents that are speaking up at school board meetings. So if a parent goes to a school board meeting and speaks out against these things that they support, they are then asking the FBI to open up investigations into those parents. And it's really happening. We talk to parents who get calls from the FBI.
Wow.
Who are questioned about them speaking at a school board meeting.
Wow.
The NEA needs to be stopped.
Well, not only the NEA, but any of these organizations, these governmental organizations that are being used to go after political opponents. I mean, that's just absurd. But, you know, getting back to this notion that if the NEA had been pushing Second Amendment, why is it that only one side of the political spectrum is ever taught in public schools? And shouldn't that be illegal if they're receiving public funds? I mean, that's how public education is funded. It's all public funds.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly undermines the entire purpose of public education, right? We're there to teach kids reading, writing, math. I mean, they need to learn. You look at the scores at all these schools, and proficiency levels are just abhorrent, right? Mm-hmm. They're just absolutely abysmal. And so, we do need to be teaching both sides of all the issues, but we also need to be abiding by the Constitution. And when you teach things and implement critical race theory in the classroom, you're actually violating the law. You are violating the constitutional rights and the civil rights of those students.
Yes.
Because you're treating them differently because of the color of their skin.
Well, is that why they tried to hide this then? Is because if they're encouraging public schools to essentially break the law, you would think that would get them in trouble.
One would think, and that's probably why they decided to hide it is just for a pure media narrative, right? They don't want to be able to be called out on it. But that's the thing about the internet. Once it's out there, it lives and it can be found.
Yes, absolutely. So If, say, for example, a publicly traded corporation had hid votes that the board had taken on key elements of their business model that would affect and direct their future course of actions, and then promptly hid them from the public, what would happen to that corporation?
I mean, if they're hiding them from their shareholders, they are arguably violating their fiduciary duties, right? Not necessarily my area of expertise, but I mean, that seems pretty clear. You have a duty to your shareholders and you need to be transparent. But that's the thing. The NAA's shareholders, right, in the sense of who their duty is to, it's to the teachers, not to the kids.
Mm-hmm.
They are not there to protect our children. They are there only to protect their own. Mm. And it's only their own who agree with them that they will protect.
Yeah, pretty shocking stuff. Okay, let's go ahead and take a break there. Come back. We'll be talking some more with Kimberly Herman. She's the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. You can find out more about the work that they do by heading to slfliberty.org. And welcome back. We're talking today to Kimberly Herman. She's the general counsel for Southeastern Legal Foundation. Their website, again, is slfliberty.org. And, of course, we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com. They are out there fighting on the front lines for you and your liberties. And Kimberly also has some great articles that will walk you through some strategies that you can use as a parent to defeat your school district's attempts to push leftist ideology on your kids, whether it's critical race theory or Black Lives Matters or any of these others. You can find links to those on this week's show page. Just scroll to the bottom to find those. And again, we were talking during the break there about this notion that the FBI is apparently calling some parents and threatening them and certainly putting fear of God into them, or at least a fear of government anyway. Do you guys have some legal remedies for parents who do get calls from the FBI?
Yeah, well, we've gotten so many kind of calls and inquiries on that we're currently working through what the best strategy is. But a few kind of things for parents to keep in mind when they go to these school board meetings and they talk. Keep it to the facts, right? Let your school board know what's happening. Read the curriculum, read the books, do all of that. Stay calm. And if you do get a call from the FBI, know that, you know, if people make a complaint about something that has been said and allege that there's a threat, they have an obligation that they have to go through and they actually have to investigate it. Because now they are looking at this under the Patriot Act. And that in and of itself is a problem, but it is what it is right now. And so stay calm, tell the facts, and know that if action is taken against you for just going and speaking at a school board meeting and you haven't made any threats, you have a First Amendment right to do that. And so if action is taken against you, they're arguably violating your First Amendment right. And give us a call. Let us know this is happening. And there might be a chance where we could help you if the facts align.
That website, again, slfliberty.org. And the irony of American patriots going there to defend their rights and defend the abuse against their kids from these school systems as part of the Patriot Act being used against American patriots. I mean, that just blows the mind. You had co-authored a recent op-ed in The American Mind titled Fighting CRT in the Classroom. And in it, you said, in 2021, we find ourselves engaged in a pitch culture war to save our nation's K-12 schools from curricula that teaches them to prioritize skin color, to distrust other racial groups, and that biological sex is a fiction that can be changed anytime. You know, when it gets right down to it, CRT and other race-based curriculum is saying one race is worse than all the others, which is the same as saying some races are better than others. If CRT was about teaching kids whites were superior to other races, I can't imagine that this would fly in public schools today. So how are they able to teach what they are teaching?
In direct violation of the Constitution and our civil rights laws and the First Amendment. They've been working to get this into our schools for decades, right? It's now that all of us parents are awake and that we are fighting against this, that they are really trying to go in overdrive here. And we have to stop it at many levels, but it really is about parents speaking up, right? We were just talking about the FBI and investigations. My fear is that that is actually going to silence parents, and parents should not let it. They have a First Amendment right. They have a right to transparency. You name it. They just need to keep fighting.
Yep. You mentioned the Hatch Act as a strategy to push back on fighting critical race theory and other obnoxious curricula. in the classroom and say the Hatch Act laws restrict political activities of government employees on work time. The rule is simple. If you are a government employee, you should not be engaged in politics on taxpayer dime. So aren't all CRT and Black Lives Matter and other leftist ideology curriculum essentially political activities? I mean, they're essentially using these to, how can they teach any of these if the goal is to indoctrinate young minds to leftist thinking? I mean, isn't that exactly using the classroom for politics?
Yeah, I mean, when you have a teacher that's requiring students to pledge allegiance to a Black Lives Matter flag or to an LGBTQIA plus flag, organizations that have expressed political policies and political plans, we would argue that's a violation of the Hatch Act. And so what we really need are we need parents to come forward and teachers who see this in their schools and want to stop it to come forward and be brave and stand with us. And let's file those lawsuits. Let's stop this. Let's file the complaints with the attorney generals in our red states where we know they will investigate this and they will stop it. Because to your point, it is political activity. And this is just another way that we can use, another arrow in our quiver that we can use to stop this in our schools.
You know, we see these kinds of videos on social media and everywhere else, and where, as you say, some teacher is making the kids pledge allegiance to the BLM flag. Why do you think more people don't step up and report that?
You know, a lot of parents didn't know what was happening in the classrooms, right? And a lot of kids were still virtual, and parents are scared, right? The number one thing that we hear from when parents come to us is, well, what about my spouse's job? Or what about my job? I can't even put on social media that I supported Trump. How can I go ahead and do this? And my response to them is, you know, create an organization, create a chapter of Moms for Liberty, become a member of Parents Defending Education. There's ways to do it and to stay anonymous.
In that article, you also refer to a previous article titled Winning the CRT Wars in the Courtroom. And in that, you detailed some successful litigation strategies for battling woke education using the Constitution and Civil Rights Acts. And we'll put up that article on iSpyRadio.com on today's show page so people can go through those strategies. But within that, you mentioned a court case of yours where a Chicago area school was blatantly focusing on skin color, even openly saying in their school materials that they are committed to focusing on race as one of the first visible indicators of identity. I mean, that's rather shocking, but I'm curious, how did that court case turn out?
It's still going on, but we're really hopeful. What I can tell you is that our client had filed a complaint with the Department of Education back in 2019, and they did make a formal finding that everything that school district was doing, which included mandatory racial segregation, violated the Civil Rights Act. The issue is when Biden took office, they withdrew that letter of finding with no explanation and no notice. Wow. And that's why our client filed the lawsuit. So we are really hopeful that we are going to have a huge win there and set great precedent that can ripple through the country.
Well, I certainly hope so. Kim, I want to thank you so much for your time today. Unfortunately, we're up against the clock, but we will definitely have you back on sooner than a year.
Yes, absolutely. Looking forward to it.
Justin Danhoff is Executive Vice President of the National Center for Public Policy Research. Previously, he served as the National Center's General Counsel as well as Director of the Center's Free Enterprise Project. Justin, it's been a year. It's good to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great to talk with you, Mark.
So as with our previous guests, it's been a whole year since we last talked. Can you briefly remind our audience about the Free Enterprise Project, what you guys do, and also how and why you do it?
Yeah, sure. So the Free Enterprise Project operates out of the National Center for Public Policy Research. We are a nonprofit based in Washington, D.C., got started in 1982 with a very unique mission. And that mission was to be a voice wherever we thought conservatives were being the quietest and to be nimble enough to react to actions on the ground. And so, you know, a little more than 12 years ago now, we looked out at the landscape of corporate America, and we noticed that there was this dynamic shift happening where corporations were now starting to align their politics, their public policy with left-wing causes, organizations, and politicians. And it was really across the spectrum. And back then, it was something called corporate social responsibility, which was the banner in which this flew. And today, it flies under the banner of stakeholder capitalism, or ESG, that's environment, social, and corporate governance. Mm-hmm. But these are all just corporate buzzwords for corporate leftism. And so, again, we looked out at the landscape, saw what was happening, and saw that there was no one in the conservative movement engaging business in the same way that liberal organizations were. And the way they did it was they bought up stock in companies so that they had a voice. To the extent there was a conservative investment movement at the time, which it was very nascent, and it was mostly religious conservative groups, their model was the exact opposite. They were a divestment model. So they would divest from companies that, for example, were alcohol, tobacco, engaged in pornography and the like. And so what the left did was they bought up companies that they wanted to turn woke before woke was even a term. To engage them as shareholders. So we just saw that there was a complete chasm on the right. There was absolutely no one doing it. So we started the Free Enterprise Project, and we got a couple of shares and a couple of companies to start. And now we own shares in, you know, hundreds of companies that we engage with regularly as shareholders.
Well, it's really kind of weird when you think about it, because you would think that the party of business, you know, those people on the right, would be more involved with business. But as I recall, last year, you guys were still the only conservative activist group doing this, attending these shareholder meetings and holding CEOs accountable for their social and public policy issues. And yet, meanwhile, as I recall, you have dozens of left-wing organizations that file something around 90 or 95% of policy-oriented shareholder resolutions. I mean, why do you think other conservative organizations are not getting involved with this?
Well, I'll say this much. 2021, really, a lot of conservatives became awake to the woke. I like to say that the left went a little bit too far with business when it came to voter integrity in Georgia, right? Because look, the right isn't monolithic. There's, you know, big L libertarians, small L libertarians, big C conservatives, small C conservative. You know, there's religious conservatives. We have a lot of different types of conservatives. And so some of them don't really care. Libertarians don't really care about social issues, right? Where, you know, religious conservatives do. But voter integrity, every type of conservative cares about that.
Yeah.
Right. And so when we saw hundreds of leading American businesses come out in the spring of 2021 and just make wildly false accusations mm-hmm. of racism in Georgia over voter integrity measures, I think that that solidified a lot of conservatives to say, what in the world is going on here? What happened to big business? And of course, we've known about it for, you know, 12, 13 years at the Free Enterprise Project. But I think it took that instance to kind of, you know, take the glare off of big business for a lot of, you know, conservatives and Republicans. I like to put it this way. Big business divorced conservatives at least a decade ago, but we just found the paperwork in the drawer last month, right? So we've got a lot of catch up to do on the right of center. But yeah, as the landscape still stands, there's a lot of conservative groups that are now engaged in fighting ESG woke capital, but they're so very new to it. They don't, you know, they're looking for direction and trying to figure out where they can play in this space. So yeah, as it stands, we're still the group that files, you know, basically almost all the right of center shareholder resolutions. But more groups are getting more and more interested. Like I said, we're more awake to the woke than we've ever been.
Yeah, I certainly think so. When it comes to these types of shareholder resolutions and the questions that you pose to the CEO and other leadership, is there strength in numbers? For example, if you had a list of companies that you guys owned shares and people were to say, hey, I have shares in that one too, can they join forces with you so that you could have maybe, say, 30 shareholders with a total of 3,500 shares? Would those additional shareholders make it harder for companies to ignore you and your concerns about leftist woke policies?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the left has all sorts of machinations to garner support for their resolutions when it comes to voting. Because, look, shareholder rights are property rights, and conservatives always claim we care about property rights. But the evidence shows that at annual shareholder meetings, liberals show up to vote at a dramatically higher pace than conservatives. That should be concerning to us, that we're not engaging with our property rights at the same level that the left is. So, yeah, absolutely. We could use a lot more support for our shareholder resolutions. And, you know, we have made this actually quite easy for folks.
I was just going to say real quick, I only got about 30 seconds here. Where would they find out what companies you guys are working with?
Yeah, come to nationalcenter.org, click on the Free Enterprise Project, and we can talk about a whole slew of resources that we've put up there to help folks engage.
Okay, great. Let's go and take a break there. We'll talk about some of those resources and also coming up some examples of fighting back against woke corporations. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Justin Danhof. He is Executive Vice President of the National Center for Public Policy Research. And one of their programs is the Free Enterprise Project, which pushes back against woke corporations. And Justin, going out of that last segment, you mentioned that you guys have some resources for people to use so that they can get involved and also push back. So talk to our audience about that.
Yeah, so early spring, we put out every year something called the Investor Value Voter Guide. We started 2 years ago, and it's the first ever guide of its kind for conservative and religious-minded American investors. So what we do is we break down the most important ESG, environment, social, and corporate governance shareholder resolutions that are going to a vote that year. Most shareholder meetings are held during the spring, so we get it out, you know, right in advance of the bulk of shareholder meetings. And, you know, we need folks to come to nationalcenter.org, check out the guide, download it, and share it and spread it widely. Again, there's no other tool for conservatives to use to know how to vote their values when it comes to these corporate proxy statements. And a lot of folks, you know, Mark, they ask me, why are shareholder resolutions so important? I'll tell you, it's very simple. They move the cultural needle. Let me give you one concrete example. 3 and 4 years ago, liberal organizations started filing shareholder resolutions demanding affirmative action, essentially, for corporate boards of directors. Okay, well, fast forward, the end of 2020 and still being fought out today, NASDAQ put forward a rule whereby they're going to now delist any company from the NASDAQ, delist them, kick them off of the public exchange if they don't have at least 2 board seats set aside for affirmative action. So the agent of change in 3 to 4 years went from, you know, liberal shareholder activists like Jesse Jackson and the SEIU to the NASDAQ. And again, this happens. I could give you so many topics where this occurs, right? When it comes to all of the CRT type trainings and audits that are going on all throughout corporate America, where critical race theory is just as prevalent as it is in academia. Again, those started from shareholder resolutions a couple of years ago demanding them. And so, you know, that's why they're so important. And that's why the imbalance in both the number of groups on the left that file compared to the number of groups on the right and in the successful voting that is occurring on these proposals, that these two imbalances conservatives really need to pay attention to. And to put a fine marker on it, liberal ESG resolutions for 5 consecutive years have broke their records.
Wow.
So 5 years ago, they broke every record they had ever set. And subsequently, every year they've done. Imagine if conservatives lost 5 consecutive political election cycles. We wouldn't stand for it. We would call for radical change, you know, in messaging and platforming and everything else and candidate seeking. But we're doing precious little, in my opinion, to fight back against the corporate proxy ballot.
Well,
and so,
and also just think of it too, by speaking up from and so that these corporations hear from those on the right, it's also going to stop some of these billions of dollars flowing to the left. Because if they know that some of their shareholders are against this kind of thing, if they know that there's an outcry, you know, rather than being silent, you could actually be heading off some of those donations that then, you know, get into society and help fund things like CRT in classrooms.
Yeah, Apple, $100 million of shareholder money to Black Lives Matter type causes.
Yeah.
Where's that money going to end up?
Yeah.
Like, how bad is that going to corrupt society? Walmart announced about the same amount of money. This is happening everywhere, every day, and there's not a lot of accountability.
No.
Because, again, the right, and here's the inclination that I get, and my inbox, Mark, is flooded with emails like this. Oh, I'm so mad at Nike, I'm done with them. I'm so mad at Coca-Cola, I'm done with them. You know, hashtag go woke, go broke. And that's exactly the opposite of how the left has succeeded so well in the corporate cultural lane. The left may threaten to boycott here and there, but they don't actually boycott. And certainly the right, you know, we're Chicken Little when it comes to threatening to boycott companies, because we threaten to do it all the time, but no one ever follows through.
Hmm.
And so stop telling a company you're going to, you know, you're going to throw your Nikes in a wood chipper. Because guess what? When little Sally needs cleats for soccer practice, you're probably going to go get a pair of Nikes because you forgot you're boycotting them.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah,
and so that's all I'm saying.
It's really crazy to think that places like Walmart are donating hundreds of millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter. I mean, they used to be a conservative company, very pro-America, and yet here we are. Let's talk about one of your more recent fights. This was against Visa, the credit card company, on January 25th, so just a few days ago. You submitted a question to the annual shareholder meeting demanding to know why the U.S. government is boycotting the Winter Olympics in China due to genocide against its own people, the Uyghur Muslims in China. But Visa is still sponsoring the games anyway. Talk to us about your question and what went on at that shareholder meeting.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little appalling to think that in the era that we live in, Georgia can't host a Major League Baseball All-Star game because of some voter integrity measures.
Right.
But we're going to host the Olympic Games, with the Chinese Communist Party committing genocide against minority Muslim populations. So Visa is one of the primary sponsors. It's an American company, for goodness sake. So we just wanted to know, and the question I submitted was so basic. It is, do you believe the bipartisan
yes.
assessment
mm-hmm.
of the State Department that the Chinese government is engaged in genocide? Like, do you believe that? And if so, why are you sponsoring the Olympics? And they refuse to even address the question. So think about that. The CEO, Alfred Kelly, can't even address if they believe in our own U.S. government assessment, and if so, why they're sponsoring the Olympics. So if a company is doing something good and noble, they would defend it. The fact that they can't even defend the action, why are you taking it then? If you're clearly they feel shame, why would you take an action that you can't defend? It's crazy to me, but that's the world that we live in. And when we talk about the hypocritical nature of this as well, it just shines you in the face. Again, Visa is another one of these companies that has bent its knee to Black Lives Matter and moralized here in America on social issues, on racial justice issues, moralized to Americans, but can't even stand up for a minority population that is having genocide,
yes.
forced sterilization of Uyghur women.
Yeah,
I mean, there's no morality in Visa. I'm sorry.
No, and then you've got the irony, too, of a corporation like Nike that actually uses some of the child labor and some of the Uyghur slave labor over there, and yet their logo is going to be splashed all over some of those Winter Olympic uniforms. It's just crazy. All right, coming up, when it comes to scandals, there is no shortage of them in Congress. We'll talk about the latest from Nancy Pelosi right after this. And we're back in our final segment now with Justin Danhof. He is the Executive Vice President of the National Center for Public Policy Research. Previously, he served as the National Center's General Counsel, as well as the Director of the Center's Free Enterprise Project. Free Enterprise Project is holding woke corporations accountable. Be sure to hit the links there on iSpyRadio.com, and we'll point you to some of their projects that they have, as well as some resources. And so, Justin, you know, we've said it many times on this show, the entire purpose of Democrats getting elected is to get themselves and their organization billions of dollars in taxpayer dollars. But there's another way to make themselves money. Congressional insider trading, and Nancy Pelosi, as it turns out, is one of the best stock market pickers of all times. This has been making a bit of the news lately, in part because it's so blatantly obvious and hypocritical that the leader of the Tax the Rich Party is out there making millions on insider trading. So what's going on here? And isn't this a clear violation of existing law?
Yeah, look, one issue with Congress has always been that it kind of writes its own rules, right? And so we have, you know, multiple members of Congress, including Nancy Pelosi, who enter and they make a decent salary. Like, don't get me wrong, you know, but the Washington, D.C. area is not cheap. And then somehow, after, you know, they're here for a couple of terms, they now have a beach house, you know, in Fort Lauderdale. They've got a ski house in Vail, and, you know, tens of millions of dollars. And when it comes to Nancy Pelosi, her trading has been so successful that it was over a year ago now that a bunch of users on Reddit got together and started making their trades based off of her trading activity because she was doing so well. And when we have folks like, you know, Dr. Fauci, who makes the highest salary in the federal government, also investing in, I don't know, Chinese companies, in Moderna, in Pfizer. These are clear conflicts of interest. So we've got key decision makers making decisions about things like, you know, public health, the laws that all of the rest of us are going to live under. And then they're influenced by, you know, their own trading. That's just it's immoral. It's certainly, a conflict. Many of these members, they have reporting requirements, mm-hmm. but they don't hit them. They don't meet their deadlines. And, no. And it's all just washed away and forgiven.
Yeah.
And so it's really, look, Mark, you and I would be thrown in jail for a whole litany of what I just listed, right? And so that's just it. Why are they held to such an extreme different standard than the average American investor would be?
Oh, absolutely. There was a Markets Insider investigation back in December of 2021 that found that dozens of federal lawmakers and at least 182 top congressional staffers are all violating a federal conflict of interest law known as the Stock Act. And so I looked into that, actually, because I remember when that passed and thinking, then how is this not already a thing? So I looked it up. It's called the Stop Trading on Congressional Knowledge Act, or Stock Act for short, and it made it illegal for members of Congress to engage in insider trading, theoretically, but it was passed in April 2012. The irony here is while it forbids Congress and officials from participating in IPOs, you know, that's a good thing, but it really doesn't stop or in any way that I can see prevent insider trading, merely that they need to disclose that they made the trade, but not even the same day that they do it, not the next day or even the next week or even the next month. They have 45 days to disclose their investments. And worse, just a year into the law, Congress revised it in 2013 to weaken disclosure requirements. I mean, we already pay them a big salary. Shouldn't they be stopped altogether from any trades and just put any money that they do want to invest, put that into a 401k or a mutual or even an index fund?
Yeah, it should be blind to them, right? I think that's absolutely fair and right. And look, I mean, we saw this at the beginning of the pandemic. Obviously, we didn't see it. They all saw it. But in retrospect, once the reporting came out, we saw that numerous members of Congress had just dumped, you know, their holdings because they knew in March, you know, that the stock market was going to crash, which it did. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they had advanced warning of the lockdown. We were all hit in the face with them, right? And so the average American sees their holdings completely wiped, and Congress got to sell high and then buy everything low again. And it's just not, look, it's corrupt. And you're absolutely right. Like we cannot let Congress hold themselves to the standards that they set for themselves. they work for us. We need to remind them of that regularly and whenever we can.
Yeah. I don't think they believe that anymore. I don't think that they believe that they work for us anymore. They work for themselves. On the other side of things, in addition to the insider trading, you've got the Fed out there that is saving the wealthy. The uber rich have made billions while the poor and middle class are eaten up in the inflation that's been happening really as a direct result of the Fed. Some people have tried to justify this and say, oh, look, it's driving up home prices, so homes are worth more now. But the middle class is not out there selling their house every other weekend, so you can't say that this real estate boom has helped them at all. They're not investing millions into the stock market to make even more millions like these insider traders. But meanwhile, you've got the Fed out there choosing winners and losers in the stock market. You've got hundreds of billions of dollars being invested into corporations like Apple and Microsoft and Amazon thanks to the Fed. I mean, isn't it time to start looking at maybe reining in the Fed in terms of what they can and can't invest in, and certainly need to be much more transparent about it?
Yeah, I mean, look, at a minimum, public scrutiny has done a little bit here, right? The number two at the Fed did resign over his trades that were all taking place pandemic related. So that at least is one positive to come out of Washington in recent years. But yeah, the Fed is a mess. Okay. You know, Jerome Powell, Janet Yellen, Raskin, I mean, they are now pushing for environmental initiatives that have nothing to do with the Fed's mission, right? It's basically, they're going to stress test banks on whether or not they're investing enough in clean energy. So they're literally manipulating markets for public policy preferences of folks who live in Davos, and rather than looking out for Main Street investors.
Yep. And if your friends and neighbors, if your friends and colleagues happen to know where you're going to be putting those money, the Fed, suddenly you can be making an awful lot of profits. Justin, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. I want to thank you so much for your time today, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it.
Check out this week's show page at iSpyRadio.com for links to both our guest organizations. These are nonprofit organizations that are out there on the front lines fighting for you and your liberties. Kimberly's organization is the Southeastern Legal Foundation at slfliberty.org. You can contact them about possible cases, and especially if you are a parent who has been threatened by the FBI, they want to hear from you. Justin's organization is the National Center for Public Policy Research at nationalcenter.org. Their free enterprise project has tools for you to help push back against leftist corporations funding anti-American organizations. It is time to stand up. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.